Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and coming up Monday, we will look at changes to Medicare already happening under the Obama health reform law. Some of them matter in the open enrollment period that is underway this month for 2011, and we'll take calls on how these changes affect you or your older relatives and give some advice. That's coming up Monday. Medicare changes already in effect under the Obama health reform law, Monday here on The Brian Lehrer Show. Right now, in the week that politicians the world over are reeling from having their personal emails exposed by WikiLeaks, leave it to New York to have its very own email scandal. It's a bit of a complicated story, so stay with me for a minute. Last February, as you might remember, rumors surfaced that the New York Times was working on a damaging, soon-to-be-published bombshell of a story about Governor David Patterson's personal life. That prompted a flurry of emails between the governor's press officers and a variety of reporters. Well, as we all know now, it turned out that the rumored story by the New York Times was just that, a rumor. But the story about the non-story, it turns out, is a story in itself. This week, the emails between the governor's press secretaries and reporters in the run-up to the alleged New York Times story were released. They came out after a Gawker columnist, John Cook, and a Columbia Journalism Review writer, Clinton Hendler, filed Freedom of Information Law requests for the documents. To be sure, there's no bombshell here, but the Patterson emails published this week offer an inside look at the back and forth between Flax and Hacks when a scandalous story is expected to break. So joining me to talk about this, we have John Cook and Clinton Hendler, the one from Gawker, the other from Columbia Journalism Review. Welcome to you both.
Hi, good to be here.
Hi, happy to be here.
And we are also joined by Liz Benjamin, host of Capital Tonight, which airs on cable stations around the state, and who joins us frequently to talk about Albany. Liz was one of the reporters whose emails were exposed by this Freedom of Information Act request. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. So, Clint from Columbia Journalism Review, there was no bombshell, as we said, coming out of these emails. So why should the public care about this?
Well, I'm not sure. I guess bombshell, maybe not, but there were some interesting stories. The two most interesting revelations to my mind that came out of these emails was that the Associated Press's Capital Bureau chief had a really tense go-around with his editors on Super Bowl Sunday, which was sort of the night that these rumors finally broke through to the print mainstream press. It got tense enough that he threatened to withdraw his byline from the piece, and he sort of spilled his guts about this incident to the governor's communications director over the course of the next week in some emails that looked like he was trying to sort of repair his relationship with the communications director. Now, the AP wasn't interested in speaking about what actually went on those nights, so we really only have the accounting as they come through the emails, and it's a little bit contradictory and muddled, but it seems like something along those lines took place. The other most significant story to my mind was that, of course, the rumors that were going around Albany were that the Times story was going to have something to do extremely personally damaging to the governor, maybe about sex, maybe about drugs. And the emails show that actually at some point in late January, the Times was pursuing a line of questioning that had to do with the governor's relationship with women who weren't his wife. That story never made it into print, and the governor's office vehemently denied it in these emails that we have, and also a related version of that rumor, which did make it into page 6 in the New York Post. But perhaps that line of questioning suggests a little bit how the rumor mill got kicked off.
So, John Cook from Gawker, I have one of the emails here. Let me read it. It's dated February 7th, 2010, and it's an email sent to Peter Kaufman, Patterson's communications director, by an editor at the Associated Press, Michael Gormley. This is what Gormley writes to Kaufman about the alleged information coming out on the alleged Patterson story. Quote, Tabs, meaning the tabloid newspapers, are onto something pretty specific. 24-year-old staffer, sex with the governor, a trooper walks in and the governor asks if she will join them, unquote. The email kicked off a chain of emails between Kaufman and Gormley. So what do they reveal to us?
What do the emails reveal to us?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, one thing that the Gormley emails reveal, I think, is that the extent to which the AP, the editors of the AP, felt an enormous amount of pressure to match or
to run a story to run that they didn't
right.
have.
That Gormley said he spent 10 hours on Sunday, on Super Bowl Sunday, and determined that it was not true. But that day, Business Insider, which is a blog, ran an item sourced to one anonymous person saying the story's coming out tomorrow in the New York Times and the governor's going to resign. And that story, just from Business Insider, sparked just this enormous amount of pressure and a firestorm that the AP, the sort of the most serious sort of, you know, journalism institution in the nation, felt this enormous pressure to essentially launder a phantom rumor.
And Clint, the AP did in fact run a story saying Patterson's political future was in doubt over, quote, unproven accusations about his personal conduct. So for you at Columbia Journalism Review that, you know, exists to critique journalism, what does this episode represent?
The word that comes to mind and has been used again and again to discuss this entire, a two-week period, it was bizarre. And it was an extremely difficult choice. It raises some very tough questions about what you do when a rumor, which nobody knows the real substance beneath it, is actually beginning to affect state government. It's beginning to hamper the way the governor is thinking about his election plans, thinking about the conduct of running the state. And I have enormous sympathy to the journalists who were trying to figure out what to do at the time. There were a lot of tough calls made. Did the AP make the exact right one that day? It's very hard to second guess. All things considered, the Wire story that Gormley put together that night was pretty responsible and did its best to explain what was going on without going too far into vague speculation. Mm. But man, what a tough call.
So, Liz Benjamin, you were reporting and writing a column for the Daily News at the time. First of all, how do you feel being on the other side of the fence in this? You know, now it's the reporters' emails that are being outed by others rather than the reporters simply outing government emails.
Well, I have a lot, actually, to say about this. First of all, with all due respect to these two guys, and I don't have any problem necessarily with them releasing my emails to public figures on, you know, they are taxpayer-funded positions, these spokespeople, and they use taxpayer-funded email to communicate with me. However, with all due respect, you guys, you weren't there, and you haven't covered Patterson, which is an incredibly frustrating thing to do. And let's just remember that this is a guy who, within 24 hours after being sworn in, was having a Red Room press conference at the Capitol and saying, I had an affair with a woman who wasn't my wife, who was on the state payroll, and he was fielding all sorts of questions about that and about his campaign funding and about how long the relationship had lasted and who this woman was and all sorts of stuff. That's 24 hours into his new administration, and he took over for a guy who resigned because of a prostitution scandal. So it's not exactly a run-of-the-mill sort of situation. And when there are rumors about a guy's conduct, when his personal life is already in question, I think they're fair game. And it's fair to speculate about the possibility that he has been having more affairs when he's already admitted that he had one.
But what exactly is fair game? You said rumors are fair game. Are rumors fair game as opposed to sourced...
I don't think that rumors, there were a lot of people who were talking about the governor and his conduct. A lot of people who said they saw stuff, a lot of people who said that they knew stuff. Look, all I can tell you is what happened with me was that I wrote on the blog that I was writing at the time for the Daily News that the Times was working on something. And all of my sources were saying, hey, you know, I got a call from the New York Times and they were asking X, Y, and Z. The unfortunate reality about reporting on a fishbowl like Albany or even Washington is that all your sources talk to the same people and then they tell you what they're talking about. That's unfortunate, and that's what happens.
Clint,
so I knew what the Times was asking. I know that was the case.
I should say, this is John Cook. I think Liz is absolutely right. I mean, I work for a site that traffics in gossip. We address this when it happens. So, I mean, I don't think there. I think it is. You know, I mean, obviously, I think you need to have be reasonable about it. But I think obviously, you know, rumors can be fair game, and I think in this instance it was. What I do think though is that the outlets like the Associated Press, which position themselves as sober arbiters of what's news and what counts and what doesn't, find themselves in a bind because this is an instance where they found it in their interest to traffic in rumors, but that's at odds with the public image as sort of guardians of of journalistic propriety that they claim to represent. So I think that's where this is.
And they're getting killed, though. And they're getting killed, the Associated Press, because of the 24-hour news cycle and blogs and everyone else who, with all due respect to the Associated Press, is doing it better than they are. So, yeah, they're under pressure to perform, and I understand that, and I feel for them. Plus, in terms of the Capitol Bureau, they don't have the same number of people that they did before. And I think everybody is doing more with less, and everyone feels pressured to break a story in a news cycle when it's not if you can break it today before the other guy, it's can you break it 2 minutes before the other guy? Can you break it 2 seconds before the other guy? It's a totally different news situation. But when you're covering a person, and let's remember, you're covering a person who has issues with veracity and who people have trouble believing because he switches his story around so many times on a whole number of issues, it's hard to get a grip on something that's really slippery.
And yeah, this is Clint here. I mean, and I'd like to chime in and just say that, you know, I said it was an enormously tough call. I didn't necessarily say it was the wrong call. But these emails are a way to take a look at the decisions that were going on at the time and to figure out what's the right way to handle this. You know, Albany has a hyperactive press corps, and there is the unique situation of the Daily News and the Post being right in the middle of it, and you know, and all the New York focused gossip blogs. But it's not just Albany, and these questions are going to be cropping up again all over the country as we move more and more towards digital dissemination of news. So it's worth taking a look at the period of time and seeing, you know, what we can learn from it.
By the way, Clint, the Sober and Serious Columbia Journalism Review and Gawker, known first as a gossip site, have very different missions, and yet here you are working alongside each other in this freedom of information request, both covering the press in your different ways, but coming out, well, winding up being guests together on this show.
Right. Well,
how unusual was that for you?
You know, I see the base irony, but just to start with a technical clarification, John filed his own request. I filed my own request. We didn't find out that we had each filed these requests until the state happened to deny us on the same day.
Were you after the same things?
Almost
pretty close,
yeah.
Our requests had some minor technical differences, but more or less we asked for the same set of emails. Yeah.
For the same – like what question were you really trying to answer, John, at Gawker?
Well, I mean, I should say that the genesis of, the idea, of this idea comes from The State, which is a newspaper in South Carolina.
Right.
During the Mark Sanford's hike on the Appalachian Trail, reporters at The State thought it would be a good idea to see what the national news media were asking of his press people and what they were saying in response. So they filed a request like this and got some amazing emails that showed just the obsequiousness of the National Press Corps begging for access to Sanford, you know, attacking other reporters and saying that we're going to do it better. And you know, very at odds with the kind of tough, we're going to be tough on the politicians kind of public face that they present. And that was really interesting. And so I then filed some requests for email traffic during Spitzer's meltdown with reporters in New York and got them no problem. The state handed them over without any objections. And there were interesting things in there. There were you know, reporters asking for access to Patterson, the new governor, and at the same time saying to the outgoing press secretary, if you need help finding a job here at NBC, let me know. There were this transactional quality of the emails, and I think that's interesting. So I was looking for basically that sort of stuff just to see how these people, you know, interact with each other under these stressful situations.
And Gawker, for its reputation as a place for dish, often comes up with stories about the media that the stately old media just doesn't get.
Right. And the other thing I was looking for was just simply what were the rumors? You know, the rumors at the time that were swimming were very vague, and I was looking for a reporter to say, I heard David Patterson, you know, XYZ. And that, you know, there actually wasn't much of that.
And ultimately, a big story about David Patterson that turned into a real scandal did come out of this reporting. Because it was through, Liz, it was through the Times investigation of these possible extramarital relationships that they wound up getting the story of Patterson's, you know, possible attempt to cover up or squelch a legal case that was a sexual or domestic assault case against his top aide.
Right, that's correct. And actually, you know, there was so much of an uproar over the New York Times story and what it would be. The first one was sort of a nothing. I mean, you know, in retrospect, it wasn't nearly the bombshell. It was about David Johnson and his unusually close relationship with David Patterson. We're talking about his quote-unquote body man, who since then subsequently was implicated in a domestic violence case, and then subsequently it became clear in the next story that the governor had in fact personally, you know, put involved himself in the situation, and there had been all sorts of confusing go-betweens and trying to get the woman in question to perhaps, drop the charges or not go public. And then there was another scandal that had to do with the Yankees World Series tickets, and that one is still pending. That one's in the hands of the Albany County DA. So, again, we're getting to, some of this is like, the governor at the time became very angry, and he had a number of press conferences before the Times stories came out, and he attacked the media for daring to suggest that there might be something that he was doing wrong and that he might have to resign, et cetera, et cetera. And the reality comes to be that actually he was doing something wrong. There were things that were problematic, and he didn't run as a result.
And something more serious than having an extramarital affair. By the way,
Correct.
Liz, we will note that at the end of one of your email exchanges with the governor's press aide, Kaufman, you wrote, "I won't put this in an email," and presumably called him instead. So we conclude that you were smarter than a lot of ambassadors at U.S. embassies around the world.
I don't know necessarily about that. I think that I am cognizant of the fact that when you are communicating with people, and look, if you didn't learn anything from Elliot Spitzer, then, shame on you. I'm sorry. And I'm not talking about the prostitution. I'm talking about the Wall Street investigations and emails brought down, he used to bring people down. Subsequently, he didn't learn his own lesson because his own emails became subject of the Troopergate investigation.
John, we have 15 seconds left.
I just want to point out that the AP actually took extraordinary steps to prevent these records from being released. The AP learned about this request and hired an outside lawyer to lobby the state to not release them. So, the AP, which makes its living off of FOIA requests, in this instance decided that it didn't want its own reporters to be subjected to that kind of scrutiny, which I found very ironic.
Yeah, so interesting when the press itself winds up in that position. But there we leave it with Clinton Hendler from the Columbia Journalism Review, John Cook from Gawker, and Liz Benjamin now with Capital Tonight, the cable television politics show from Albany that airs around the state. And before you go, Liz, you have agreed to be part of our Brian Lehrer Show guest gift guide collection. What are you giving this year?
Well, I actually do this generally. I like to give experiences because I just think they're more fun. So I give out to my parents mostly, like spa certificates at Mohonk, which is my favorite place to hang out in the holidays, and I grew up in New Paltz. So
experiences are definitely winning in 2010. Thanks again to all of you. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
And speaking of Hanukkah gifts, we're going to have the world's shortest call-in since our segments this hour ran long. Coming up in just a minute, start calling us now to answer the question, what's your Hanukkah gift-giving strategy? What's your strategy on a holiday that calls for 8 nights of presents? Is it 7 dreidels and an Xbox or what? Call us right now. We just have a few minutes to hear your Hanukkah 8-night gift-giving strategies, parents. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Write to those calls right after this.